The reason we've organized this conference is because frequently there's this misperception that somehow a married priesthood is less than authentically Catholic. And, you know, we understand that when we're only 1% of the total population of Catholics throughout the world, you know, this kind of minoritarian tradition is not going always to be understood or covered. But I think nonetheless, in spite of the fact that it's a very small minority, it's a very important one, because we know that throughout the centuries, married priests and their wives and children have suffered for the Catholic faith.
You have examples of this within your own family, don't you?
Yes, my wife's grandfather in Ukraine, with his wife and the two youngest of nine children — the older children were able to flee to the West during the war, but the two youngest daughters, along with Father Mikhailo Hanushevsky and his wife Oresia Hanushevsky, were sent off to Siberia for 10 years, precisely because of their loyalty to the Pope of Rome. They would have been spared the agony, the tribulation, the arrest, etc., if they had simply signed a one-sentence thing. In fact, they didn't even have to sign anything. All that Father Hanushevsky had to do is stop commemorating the Pope of Rome at the Divine Liturgy and start commemorating the Patriarch of Moscow. Father Hanushevsky was a real Catholic. He understood that a cessation in the commemoration of the Pope of Rome would be contrary to everything that he stood for. He could not make that kind of switch, even though there were other priests who did it. And as a result of that, he spent, as I say, 10 years in Siberia. And then even after Siberia, they were in a kind of internal exile. For years, they had to live in a distant part of Ukraine as opposed to Western Ukraine. And the part of Siberia that they were at was actually north of China. So it took them 3 weeks in a boxcar to get to their location of Siberian imprisonment.
Tell us a little bit about the situation today. Of course, the difficult ecumenical situation in Ukraine is partly because of the East and the Greek Catholic Church, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, yeah, certainly over there and in the West, there is concern about the fact that if the Eastern Catholics in the United States, for example, are not allowed to ordain native-born American Eastern Catholic men, you know, married men to the priesthood, that Rome's declarations about its desire for reunion with the Orthodox and the equality of rights, etc., that those declarations are somehow insincere. So there were a lot of Orthodox now who are looking at this situation and saying, hold it, if this is how the Eastern Catholics in the United States, for example, are treated on this issue, can we trust the Catholic Church in our ecumenical discussions? Because it's not a matter of introducing some kind of a new practice. I mean, this is a practice. The practice of optional celibacy goes to the origins of the church. There were always married priests.
Interestingly, the Catholic Church has quite recently introduced the ordinariates for former married Anglican priests and their wives. Is this likely at all to change this perception, as you say, that there is an alternative?
Right. What is very interesting about that situation is, you know, that in the case of the ordinariate, a lot of people have told me that that's just a one-time exception. In other words, it's a transitional reality. And we are concerned that in places, for example, there are places where some, you know, a special kind of arrangement can be made, and, you know, some individual in an Eastern Catholic community somehow does manage to get ordained. But we are concerned that instead of then the married priesthood being recognized as an integral part of our tradition, as is guaranteed by Vatican II unequivocally, that instead it will be, well, yeah, these Eastern Catholics, they're just like the Anglicans. There's this kind of temporary exemption that we're making for them. And we want to point out that we don't view ourselves as some kind of temporary immigrant alien reality in North America. We now have 5-6 generations of Eastern Catholics in North America who should be able to practice their authentic traditions. The other thing I think that's very important about this whole dimension of optional celibacy among the Eastern Catholics is that whereas in the so-called home territories, you know, in Ukraine, Eastern Slovakia, there really isn't much of a problem over this. But the moment we go into places like the United States, there's this you know, there's the position is very clear. You are now in so-called Latin Rite territory, and you better do what the quote-unquote, you know, dominant church does. Well, I'm sorry, but the churches, the Catholic Church's documents are very clear on this. And in fact, I frequently point out that, you know, cafeteria Catholicism is rampant in all sorts of places. Even people who claim to have a real loyalty to the magisterium have not read what the Catholic Church says about the Eastern Catholic Churches. And what it says is that we Eastern Catholics have the right to maintain our sacramental practice inviolably throughout the world precisely because we are called upon to spread the gospel throughout the world in the same way that the Latin Rite communities are called to do that. And I think that in the context of the new evangelization, this is crucial. I refuse to be boxed into a church that is perceived as some kind of ethnic transient reality where, you know, you go for a couple of years to get your kind of ethno-liturgical fix, but, you know, to get real religion, to get real Catholicism, sooner or later you have to, you know, go to a Roman Catholic church. And by the way, again, there's a very personal dimension. I have more than 120 cousins, nieces, nephews, aunts, etc. All of them were baptized in the Ukrainian Catholic Church. Today, easily 70% of them have become Roman Catholics. Now, it's not only that Roman Catholic parishes entice them. I mean, frequently we our own Eastern Catholics don't do a good enough job in ministering to our own people. But this perception that somehow, you know, there's real Catholicism and then there's this second-class Catholicism, it ends up impacting on everyone in a very direct way in our communities. And my case is not a unique case. And so it is our task as Eastern Catholics to do what we have to do, which may, which certainly includes ordaining qualified, married Eastern Catholic candidates to the priesthood, so that, for example, we will have the number of clergy that we need, so that we will have a larger pool of candidates to choose from. And that's something that we are entitled to do. Now, are we suggesting that the Latin Rite do this? Absolutely not. In the same way that we don't like the Latin Rite telling us how to do our divine liturgy, you know, that we don't want them telling us how to do the Byzantine divine liturgy, we certainly don't want to tell Latin Rite Catholics what they're supposed to be doing with regards to celibacy. But when it comes to our own tradition of optional celibacy, that has to be respected.
Pope Benedict himself also spoke about the valuable contribution, didn't he, of married priests in the apostolic exhortation from the Synod on the Middle East.
Right. And it's funny you should mention that, because I actually begin my speech with a word of profound gratitude to His Holiness for that exhortation. There's a recognition, right after, of course, a very legitimate recognition of the, you know, continued consistent value of celibacy, he then says, and I also turn with a word of encouragement to the married priests and their families, that during this great time of difficulty, they might be encouraged, upheld, that they might continue on the path to holiness. I think that is absolutely one of the most beautiful things that could have emerged from the Synod, because you may recall that after the Synod, there was some discussion, you know, about, well, you know, what's happening, you know, with the, you know, these married priests in the Eastern Catholic Churches, in the Middle East, and throughout the world. And we got real clarity from His Holiness on this point with this encouragement.